Hey there. Before we get to this week's episode, I just wanted to thank you for being a monthly subscriber to this show, and I wanted to ask you to encourage your friends to subscribe. Tell them to go to patreon.com/Sirota. Your support helps make this show possible, and I really, really appreciate it. Okay, now here's this week's episode. Should Donald Trump be impeached? On this episode, I talked to billionaire Tom Steyer, who says the answer is yes, and who's funding a national campaign to push lawmakers to begin impeachment proceedings as soon as possible.
Joining me now to discuss is Dave Sirota.
David Sirota, you were the first person that popped into my brain when I heard Fourth Amendment.
Does that have David Sirota worried?
Boston Globe has now started picking up and running with a potentially politically deadly story that was first unearthed by the great David Sirota.
God bless this guy, David Sirota. I love that guy.
David Sirota is not a journalist. He's a hack.
Even the New York Times has called you a populist rabble-rouser, okay? Are you a Che Guevara? Are you a Che Guevara for our age? And do you look forward to a day when college students wear your face on their shirt and don't know what you did?
Tom Steyer has been one of the Democratic Party's biggest financial supporters. He made his fortune in the investment world, and he spent lots of money to support Democratic candidates, as well as to support the fight against climate change. Lately, he's made headlines with a new project, a campaign to impeach Donald Trump. On this episode, I talked to Steyer during his stop here in Denver to promote his impeachment campaign. I began the conversation by asking Steyer to lay out his specific legal argument for impeachment. Here's our discussion.
So, we do divide up the impetus behind impeachment into two things, the first of which is what you said, has the president clearly met the criteria for impeachment? And since I'm not a lawyer, we did get 58 constitutional scholars to weigh in on this, and we put that on the web, the 8 different criteria on which he has breached his duty. And we also did a 2-hour symposium with 5 of those constitutional scholars to both lay out the case and answer questions. So there, it is all publicly available, and it's not coming from me. I will say that the most obvious ones are the obstruction of justice, his interference with the free press, and the emoluments clause. And let me talk for a second about the emoluments clause, because this week a story was broken by not the local Denver paper, but the South China Morning Post, which is the Hong Kong paper, saying that Chinese state banks, had lent Mr. Trump personally $500 million over the last couple of weeks to build a resort personally in Indonesia. And subsequent to that, he had changed his opinion about how to treat a major Chinese company, which he had previously felt should be shut down as a result of stealing intellectual property from American companies. And therefore, we were not going to do business with it, in which case it was going to go out of business. He reversed himself on that ZTE. And I think that from the standpoint of in the Constitution, it says a president cannot take a payment from any foreign government. This is a $500 million payment from a foreign government, which subsequently led, and you know, you can never say cause and effect, but he had a strong position. A gigantic payment was made. He reversed his strong position. So from the standpoint of, do I think that there is public information available that is obvious that he has breached his duty? The answer is yes. If you want the detailed, and this is just one example that happened this week. I'm only bringing it up because it happened, today's Wednesday and it happened this week.
Right.
I think if you want the detailed, our needtoimpeach.com website goes through all 8 criteria and has a symposium, so you can get more information on this than any one person should probably want.
So on the mixing of his business and his official activities, what do you make of the argument that's been at least insinuated out there that the public knew that he had all these business relationships in general, had a business empire in general, and the public voted for him anyway, and that therefore he effectively, I guess the argument
suggests, he has a mandate to behave the way he's behaving when it comes to the, I guess, intermingling of his business operations and his government responsibilities.
I think that that is an interesting argument that makes no sense. I think that the president is breaking the law. He's explicitly violating the Constitution in a very basic and straightforward way. And you asked me what was the criterion under which I felt that he had breached his duty to the American people and his oath to the Constitution. And what you're telling me is we now have a different standard for this president, that he doesn't have to obey the law, that he doesn't have to tell the truth. And I would say, with all due respect, that if we are not a country that calls every citizen to obey the law, that then that citizen is above the law, which is, you're asking me, how do I feel about having a king? Not good. I want to be explicit. No, I think that that's a direct attack on our democracy at a fundamental level. I think that that argument is preposterous and extremely un-American. And you're basically telling me that this president has a right to do whatever he wants. And I absolutely dispute that.
So to be clear, it's not my argument, but
I know that.
Yeah, it's just, I'm just but playing devil's
I just yes. want to be clear that, and the problem with not standing up to this president and the people who tell us we shouldn't be standing up to this president, stand down, is you're doing exactly what you just said, which is to normalize lawlessness, to normalize an attack on our democracy, and to basically accept the idea that this president is above the law. And we're right back to kind of the 16th century where the king gets to do whatever the king wants to do and the peasants don't get to say anything. And that is the exact opposite of the idea of the United States of America.
Okay, so a question about the system itself, the presidency. I'm not making a comparison between these things exactly, but but their context. We have seen in the last 20, 30 years a situation where Congress has deferred more and more power to the president. We've seen situations where the president can basically take us to war whenever a president feels like it. Barack Obama, example, had a kill list with drones and extrajudicial assassination program. Again, I'm not making a comparison specifically between that and what Trump is doing, but the question really is Trump taking advantage of a presidency that has for decades been turned into effectively an elected monarchy?
I think I would ask a different question, David, and that's this. Has the Congress of the United States and has our national government at some level broken down? And I think that that's a different question, because what we're talking about in terms of the oversight of this president by Congress, you'd say, wow, they've kind of decided not to do that job, that function, which is definitely one of their functions. You know, the right of Congress to vote war powers is an absolutely essential part of the Constitution. So to the extent that that Congress is not insisting on its rights is something that is very scary when you think about the separation of powers, the checks and balances, all the things that you learn in fourth grade civics class. They're not just nice ideas that they teach you so you can get an A in fourth grade civics class. There's a question here about when power goes to a single person, doesn't that inevitably lead to corruption and more corruption? And the answer is yes, it does. That's why we have separation of powers, because the founders were realists about human nature. And they said, if this happens and it's allowed to go unchecked, then it will happen more. And that's actually what we're seeing with this president. When we started this petition drive on October 20th, we knew that subsequent events would make our case for us. We knew that the people who were saying, you know, stand down, this is too, you know, this is not politically smart, all those things, that the events were going to make them look foolish, which is exactly what's happening, because the events were going to show that everything that we'd said was true, and then it was going to be more true, and then it was going to be more true, and that's what we're seeing.
And when it comes to Trump himself, and Trump specifically as president, let's say Trump was impeached for all of the reasons that you've laid out. Does that, in your mind, solve the problems specifically to Trump, or does that solve bigger problems with the presidency itself?
This is not a policy-driven question. This is about lawlessness, recklessness, and danger to our democracy and the American people. So this is not a question of we don't like his tax plan, therefore he should be impeached. There's no basis. The founders gave us the right to remove a president who is lawless and reckless and does not live up to his word to the Constitution, and that's what we have here. Impeaching and removing this president would go a long way to restoring us to the insistence on the rule of law, to the idea that we have a government that is run according to truth and patriotism. And those are the two things that we are insisting on. Look, we have 5.4 million people who've signed our petition drive. If you go and talk to them, they are overwhelmingly patriotic and worried about our democracy. The only two things that we are trying to organize, that we are trying to stand up for, are tell the truth and put the country and the American people first. Those are the only two things. And so do I believe that removing this president would be a strong blow on behalf of truth? I absolutely do. And do I believe that it would be a strong blow on behalf of democracy and the rule of law? I absolutely do.
Let's talk about some of the folks who have either not gotten on board or who have explicitly criticized this. And before we get to those specifics, one idea that comes to mind is that if there was even a move towards impeachment, let's say the Democrats take back Congress and there was a move to impeach Trump, which we'll get into the Democrats in a second, but just carrying that forward, do you think, what kind of a backlash do you think that would create? I mean, I think a lot of folks in their mind think politics is so polarized already that basically taking out a president would unleash even more divisiveness, polarization, anger, a backlash from Trump's base. Go through with us how you see that happening.
David, I think what you're describing is true. We're seeing a very, very divided America on partisan lines. And, you know, I think that more so if you want to look at party politics than at any time in my lifetime or your lifetime. And I think that that is something which no American can want. And I think we regret really strongly. But what you're saying, alternatively, let me put your question in a slightly different words. You're saying, should we abandon the rule of law because the rule of law is being opposed strongly? Should we abandon truth because truth is unpopular? That's actually your question. And that is the question. Let me draw a comparison to climate science. Should we abandon science because there are a group of very rich corporations and Republican donors who find climate science is bad for their bottom line? And therefore, in bringing up the need to protect our country and our people, we are annoying them and increasing the partisan divide. That's the question you just asked me. And my answer is, are we really going to give up on democracy and truth because they're unpopular, because that there are people who are strongly against them? And I would say, look back in American history and ask yourself, where would we be if when every time standing up for the truth and justice has been unpopular, which it is many times. Look at the civil rights movement and the civil rights revolution. It was unpopular.
Yeah, but I mean, the political argument would be, and this does start to get us into the Democrats, but the political argument would be impeachment is such an extreme move, this is the argument, that it's better to box Trump in, sort of prevent him from doing the worst kinds of damage, but not go all the way to take him or try to take him out of office. That seems to be what you can sort of hear that argument a little bit among the Democrats who don't want to sign, Democrats in Congress who don't want to sign on to an impeachment argument. Yes, we're against Trump. Yes, we're going to oppose him.
It mean to be against Trump if you aren't actually don't want to do anything about it?
Well, I mean, they would say we don't want to let his bills go through. We'll serve as some sort of check, a check that's somewhere beneath a full impeachment. What do you make of that argument?
I think that Democrats should not have to ask Republicans what is right. I think that what's happened is that a radical right-wing group has taken over the Republican Party, that they are pushing extremist views in a number of areas, and that they have now are headed by someone who doesn't even recognize that he is subject to American law. And you're asking me, should we go along with that because to dispute it would be divisive and unpopular? And I think that once you've moved there, once you've decided to give up on truth, once you've decided democracy is compromisable, once you've accepted that the rights of individuals in the United States of America, their dignity, their ability to be full citizens is compromisable, you've made a move that we'll never make.
Well, so then why do you think the Democrats, many Democrats in Congress, most Democrats in Congress, have not signed on to this?
Well, I don't know, because what we do is talk to the American people. I can only read what they say in public. I mean, we're here in Colorado today to do a town hall with American citizens, not to talk to the local elected officials. And so I don't know what they think. I can only tell you what they say in the press. And what they say in the press is that they're worried that by talking about impeachment and talking about the president's breaking of the law, we will upset Republican voters and drive them to the polls in November. That's what I hear. Now, that may be misinterpreted, or the people doing the reporting job have been inaccurate, but that's what I've read. And, you know, I have,
so respond to that argument.
Okay, I want to respond to it on a couple different levels. First of all, what we're trying to do is tell the truth and put the American democracy and the American people first. Those two things. Because we think the idea that people know what's going to be, what the status is going to be in November of 2018, based on a poll they did in March of 2018, given all the changes, the whole point of our petition is we know the facts are going to change. The one thing we're sure of is that everything's going to be different. And so the idea that you're worried that you're going to inflame Republicans and therefore you're playing this game of not talking about something that's incredibly important, that's at the heart of our democracy, we're not going to talk about it because you think that the polling data suggests that telling the truth is not tactically smart, seems to us to be having a really misplaced sense of what you're trying to accomplish. That's my first point, is we're dealing on a completely different level. We're just trying to tell the truth and put American democracy and the American people first. Second point, turnout. If they're talking about the fear that Republicans will turn out, our point is, how about if Democrats turn out? How about if we start telling the truth to Democrats? Because it's important that they know that we stand for things and that we will tell the truth and that they can trust us because we have a backbone and we'll stand up when things are tough, when they aren't popular. So that's my second point, is if you look at the last 10 years, Democratic turnout has been anemic. And when we're the largest organizers of people under 35 in the United States of America. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Next Gen America is the largest grassroots organization in the United States. We are on hundreds of college campuses. We are online talking to people under 35. We are the largest millennial organizers. People don't like those terms. People between 18 and 35, we organize many more of them than anyone else. They vote at half the rate of other Americans, and they tell us why. The reason they don't vote is because they don't trust the system. They don't think it responds to their personal needs, and they don't like either party because they don't think they're telling them the truth. So from my standpoint, so that's my second point. Now I'll give you my third point. We have 5.4 million people who've signed our petition. Over 60% of them don't vote. They're people who are knowledgeable, passionate, turned on, but they don't, this just like young people, and they aren't explicitly young people in this. This is just American citizens.
Yeah, it's like 3 million people.
Yeah.
Who don't vote.
Yes.
Who's on the petition?
And if you look by congressional district in the top 75 contested House races, there's about 10,000 people in each of those races who've signed up with us. So that means 6,000 of them don't vote, just to extrapolate the numbers. So my next question is, we're really talking about our people, our system. The largest party in the United States is the party of people who don't vote. That's the biggest American party, is the people who've turned off to the system because the system's not responding to them. So what we're saying is, we find it a little incredible on a practical level that driving people to the polls who are knowledgeable and passionate is a bad thing for American democracy. And we think it's particularly true given who hasn't voted in the last 10 years. But also, we start from a question of our go-to card. We think we're in a battle for the definition of what it is to be an American and for the soul of this country. That's what we think is going on this year. And when you're in the middle of a struggle that is that elemental and basic, my feeling is, and I'll just speak for myself, you have to have a go-to move. It's like if you're playing a game, you have a go-to move. When the chips are down, I'm going to fake left, go right, and bring it to the hoop. Our go-to move is tell the truth and put the American democracy and the American people first. That's our go-to move.
So the last two questions I have relate to you. You specifically, what do you make of the argument that's floated out in the press every now and again that Trump is a business mogul, you have obviously had success in business, and that American politics is being taken over by basically people who have great resources, and that I think it was, maybe it wasn't David Axelrod, it was somebody, there's been a couple of folks that have poked at this, have tried to not engage on the impeachment question and engage on the question about you. What do you say to the folks who say, we've got enough very wealthy people running our politics, and that whether you're right or wrong, your involvement at a level that you're involved in now with this is indicative of a deeper problem in our politics?
I think a couple things about it. One, I do think there's too much money in our politics. I think Citizens United is disastrous. I think that that money is corrupting our politics in a terrible way. But I think something else too, which is I think everyone who's made this claim about me is someone who's an absolute political insider. And what they're really angry about is the idea of people who aren't in their club being involved in American politics because we know best. And so what I say to him is, actually, if you look at 2016, what you see is that two people won the presidential election. Bernie Sanders won in a big way in terms of shaping the conversation. And by the way, he wasn't a Democrat. He was not a member of the Democratic Party. And Donald Trump won. And he wasn't a Republican. So for all the political insiders who are worried about people who aren't part of the club shaping the conversation, I would say, look, the American people made a statement that didn't have a doggone thing to do with Tom Steyer, that was saying, we don't feel represented. I think there's no question at this point. I think it's cliched to say that a lot of the people who voted for Mr. Trump were basically saying, the system isn't working for me. I know I don't think this guy's perfect or even close to it, but at least he's going to disrupt something that I'm very, very upset about. And I think that's really what's going on here. Is there a question of how are we going to get back to doing exactly what I said was important, which is to tell the truth to the American people about the most important issues? Because the idea of going back and trying to throw everything under the rug and keep the status quo and preserve the status quo, I think that's not working for the vast majority of Americans. I think it's absolutely a disservice to working people in this country. I think it's been going on for at least 40 years. I think it's wrong. And I think when those people say that, what they're really trying to say is, let's not change. And we've got to change.
Final question is, I've got to ask this because every journalist that I've talked to about interviewing you has told me to make sure to ask this, which is, are you running for president in 2020? Or are you going to run for the Senate? Or I guess more generally, would you consider, or are you considering, running for some sort of office?
And let me say to you and to all your friends who are reporters, I said 2 minutes ago, I think 2018 is a elemental struggle for what it means to be an American, what our most basic values are. We are all in on 2018. I do not know what is going to happen on November 6th, which is election day of this year. And by the way, neither do you. And neither does anybody who's listening to this. And the spread of outcomes, the dispersion of the things that can happen, is huge. This could be an absolute reaffirmation of 2016. It could be the exact opposite. Anyone who thinks they know, the pollsters have not called an election in the last 2 years, even close. No one knows what this electorate, where this electorate is, or who's going to show up to vote. They haven't been able to model a darn thing for 2 years. So everybody who thinks they know what's going to happen in November, shame on them. And anyone who is not involved in this, I think shame on them. So my attitude is, I have no idea what is going to happen on November 6th. So I have no idea what the right thing is going to do after November 6th. But I can say this, if you're not participating in this and you're thinking about your career, that means you're not thinking about the two things that I said we are thinking about, which is telling the truth and doing whatever we think is best for our democracy and the American people. So for the people who are focused on the question you asked of trying to have a great personal career and, you know, get great glory in 2020, I don't think that's right. I think that they should be doing what we're doing, which is we're the biggest grassroots organization in the United States focused on trying to register, engage, and turn out voters in 2018 because we think that democracy is the answer. And if you're not doing that, then I think you're doing a disservice.
Tom Steyer, thanks so much for taking time.
David, thank you for having me.
If you want to keep up with my work or get in touch with me directly, make sure to go to davidsirota.com. I want to hear from you. If there's something you want to learn about, if there's something I should be investigating, or if you just want to yell at me, send me an email. You can also follow me on Facebook and Twitter, and if you want, we can get into a nice flame war over there. This podcast is produced by Nate Lipp and Jared Sirota. Our consulting producer is Ron Doyle, and music is composed by George Laxon. I want to give a special thanks to some founding subscribers and new subscribers: Rob Johnson, Jeff Winslow, Adam Goldberg, Curtis Loftus, Alex Gibney, Benjamin Rusin, Benny Chanoff, Benno Friedman, Ruth and Mike Foster, Robbie Richman, Helen Gerhardt, Ove, Cryos, William Higgins, Brian Stamps, Stephen Woodrow, Jill Nelson, Nancy Anderson, Mary Kay Ide, and Danny Feingold. Thanks for subscribing, and thanks to everyone who's subscribing to this show. Your subscriptions make this show possible. If you like this podcast, do me a favor. Please write a review wherever you downloaded it, give it a like, and recommend it to your friends. I'll talk to you next week. Until then, keep rocking the boat.